Metro Council for July 27th order. Note that we are all here except Councillor Chase, who is excused. I do not have any blue cards, so I'm assuming there is no citizen communication. And the consent agenda, which is the next item, is, consent one item, the minutes from the July 20th council meeting. So I got to have a motion. Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Resolutions number 4.1, resolution number 174816. Ms. Papsdorf, could we read that by title only? Come on up, Ted.
Resolution number 17-4816, for the purpose of approving the air quality conformity determination for the 2018 to 2021 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Moved and seconded. Mr. Liebold.
Great. Thank you, Council President Hughes, members of the Metro Council, Ted Liebold, Planning Manager in the Planning and Development Department. I'm actually going to present today on both two items that you have before you today, the first of which was just announced, which is the air quality conformity determination for the 2018-2021 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program. We do our forward-looking analysis here. This is a document that analyzes and documents the concurrence of our partner agencies that the transportation investments that we have scheduled within this region will not result in emissions that violate any of our air quality emissions limits. It is really a document that, in putting it together, we analyze all sorts of air quality impacts, but specifically, we need to have findings that demonstrate compliance with the federally regulated emissions, which in this case is carbon monoxide. Our partner agencies, the Transportation Policy Advisory Committee and the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation have all reviewed this document and have recommended your approval. And with your approval, this report will be submitted to the Federal Highway Administration for their concurrence, which when we receive allows then the all of the investments that we have documented in the Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program to proceed. And they cannot proceed without this document's findings. And so I can also, if you would like, go ahead and talk about the next item, if that's all right with the council.
Sure.
Okay, great. So the second item that will be before you after the air quality conformity is the actual Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program itself. What the, and we call that the MTIP, I'm sure you've heard that reference before. What the MTIP does is ensure the financial capacity for all of these projects to be funded. It provides transparency to the funding process itself for all federal funds that get spent in the region. It ensures compliance with federal regulations that the planning activities and funding decisions that went into this process were all conducted in compliance with those federal rules. And then it ensures coordination of all the federal investments because federal investments, the funding from the federal transportation comes through not only the Metropolitan Planning Organization, ourselves, but actually most of it comes through either the State Department of Transportation or our transit agencies. And so one of the planning regulations is that we all coordinate those federal investments in a comprehensive way. Just a couple of quick interesting notes about the projects within the MTIP. Over this four-year period, it represents $1.6 billion worth of investments in 213 projects. This is a living document, and once it is adopted and approved, it goes through amendments, and we process amendments here on a monthly basis, so it will change. But just that gives you some sort of sense of scale of the amount of money that flows through this region and the number of projects that are happening. Of that $1.6 billion, about $680 million of it is on projects that we would call operations and maintenance. And so that's, maintaining the network that's out there now and some operating assistance for our transit agencies. About $850 million of it is in capital, new capital projects. And about $47 million of it goes into regional programs, planning, and project development. And I should mention that that $1.6 billion does represent projects that have federal funding on it. About 70% of that is the federal funds itself, and about 30% of it is local match that is required to be attached to those projects that the federal government requires. The majority of that funding does come through formulaic allocations from the federal government, but there is a portion of it where this region goes out and competes for competitive discretionary federal dollars as well. And I'm sure you're familiar that our region has been pretty successful in investing some local dollars and attracting competitive federal dollars. And in particular, the majority of those competitive federal dollars are tied up in our transit investments. We are now still receiving, even in this time frame, funding from the federal government for the Orange Line project, and we will be receiving some, we expect to be receiving some for the Division Bus Transit project. And just also a note, because there has been a state legislative package that has been passed, though I don't believe yet signed by the governor, those projects are not represented in this MTIP yet, but as they get assigned to projects, they will be amended into this MTIP. We did have a public comment process, and just real briefly, because we were demonstrating compliance with all the federal regulations, we really kind of focused our questions about the MTIP with the public on three aspects of it. One is sort of the overall funding direction of the region, and I think the comments did support that the overall direction was in line with people's desires. Of course, we did receive several comments from individuals saying, you know, wanting more or less investment in particular modes, but I think we kind of saw those on both sides of the equation, so we took that to mean we seem to be shooting down the middle. One of the federal regulations that we do need to demonstrate compliance with is our Title VI and environmental justice requirements. We were able to demonstrate that the investments did meet our requirements there in terms of not having disproportional impacts, negative impacts on our underrepresented communities. And so the questions there were really were focused on what were the most important potential negative consequences of investments that people saw. And the two things that were identified in that survey were really concerns about the combined housing and transportation costs that transportation investments might exacerbate, and the potential for economic displacement in terms of driving up living costs and dispersing populations. The second piece was also because we do the air quality conformity analysis, we did ask what types of investments were most likely to help families contribute towards reaching our air quality goals, and the number one priority there identified by the 147 respondents was investments in transit. So I did want to take the opportunity to thank Metro staff who worked on putting this document together. This is one of those pieces of work that we do, that we do a lot of work in the background and doesn't get a lot of attention, but it's we do have to do really do a lot of work to meet and demonstrate that we are complying with all the regulations and that we are coordinating with our agencies across the region to make sure we're all in agreement where this is going. And so I did want to point out Grace Cho, Jody Cotterlick, Ken Lobeck, Pamela Blackhorse, Dan Camp, Cliff Higgins, Director Alyssa Gertler, and others in our research center and communications departments who put a lot of work into this process. So I did want to recognize them. I also wanted to thank our partner agencies in helping us administer these funds, in particular ODOT, TriMet, and SMART, our agencies that receive direct federal funding or disperse it to others. And they were essential in helping us provide the information to demonstrate compliance. And then finally, I wanted to thank you, the council, and our council JPAC members providing the leadership necessary to ensure a transparent process and to ensure we're investing our transportation dollars wisely. So thank you. And with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay. Questions? Councillor Stacey. I see you poking the button there. I assume that's...
Thank you, Mr. President. You saw my hand moving, even though I was uncertain of the outcome on that pad. Ted, thank you. That was a great presentation, great report. It reminds us all, at least those of us of a certain age, that our region has come a very long way from the deep hole we were in the 60s in terms of air quality and the bleak prospects for it getting any better as we were tearing down cast iron front buildings and creating surface parking lots in the state's biggest downtown. So thank you for bringing us up to speed, giving us the progress report. We're checking another box, but we're doing something more, which is continuing a history of making it better to breathe in this region, and I greatly appreciate your presentation. I have a question. Mm-hmm. You mentioned not only the emission standards, but also the transportation control measures, and two of those, or three, the three are transit service, bike infrastructure, and pedestrian infrastructure. The colleague to my right, Councillor Harrington, has pointed out a number of times that at the current rate of expenditure on active transportation, we could be at this for two centuries before we accomplish the objectives of our active transportation plan. And my colleague has called for turning that into two decades at the most, rather than two centuries. On the life of one child, the childhood of one child, essentially. Yeah. Thank you. Given those two benchmarks, 20 years, 200 years, when we make a determination that we're making investments in accordance with performance standards that have been set in our air quality plan, are we closer to the 20-year or the 200-year marker?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Councillor Stacey. We are closer to the 200-year mark on that front. And I think the distinction there is that when the air quality plans were being developed, the transportation control measures, which you mentioned, that lay out how much mileage of pedestrian and bicycle investments that we were required to do to meet the air quality conformity or the air quality plan, were much more modest, excuse me, than the objectives we've laid out in our active transportation plan. And so I think the TCMs, as you've called them, were really at a time when we weren't investing much at all in those modes, and it was really saying you need to be serious about it and you need to start allocating money. I think the plan, the active transportation plan of goals and objectives, were more comprehensive in looking at what it is that we actually want to achieve. And so the rate at which we're meeting TCMs is a much more modest rate.
If I could follow up, Mr. President.
Sure.
Is there a basis in federal environmental law to suggest it's time for the region to look again and ensure that we're getting what we should be getting in terms of air quality now that we have a set of households who of lower income who formerly lived in closer proximity to jobs, at least in Multnomah County, and who now have greater travel distances to cover on their way to work in many cases, whether it makes sense to revisit the active transportation component as well as the transit component of those TCMs.
So, yes, my reply to that would actually be not particularly in federal law. Okay. And the federal laws were written back as part of, the creation of the EPA and all that back in the 70s.
Back in my days of vigor, yes.
Yes. And there has not... so we went through a whole planning process to develop how we were going to respond to those. We've been doing that, and we've been demonstrating through this effort and others that we have continued to comply with that. But I don't think we've really seen any progress at the federal level in terms of saying what are the next steps in terms of air quality and regulating air quality at the federal level. So I really think if we're going to do that, it's going to take a local requirements on ourselves.
Local and regional leadership there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Collette.
Thank you. Well, and thank you, Ted. This is, I know, it's one of the biggest, I was going to say most onerous, but it may be. But it certainly is one of the things that gets the most regional attention, because this is the this is where they think the transportation dollars are. But do you get a sense that people in local jurisdictions also understand that the reason we do it, the reason the region does it, is because of the air quality requirements? Is that, do people make that connection? Because I feel like sometimes they just, as a former local official, you're looking at your street grid and your sidewalk gaps and, you know, your connections to other communities, but you're not looking at some federal air quality standard. You just want to move stuff.
Right.
And to be able to make this whole set of projects work, the point is you move stuff while protecting the air. And I don't know that, do you feel like that connection is understood or that we make that case enough?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Councillor Collette, I think because we have been successful in the past in terms of moving the needle on air quality, and I think because we've had aggressive regional and local plans, that it's almost become rote that it's accepted that we're going to meet those federal things, and so they've kind of, those federal requirements, and so
yeah,
they've kind of gone to the background in terms of our consciousness, because we have been so successful in meeting them that it's almost become a non-issue. And so it's probably a good idea for us to continuously remind our local partners that we do have these requirements and that we do need to follow through on them, so that, you know, course corrections get made over time, we're not getting ourselves at a point where we might be running afoul of them.
Yeah, because if we slip, if we don't meet the air quality requirements, we don't get the transportation dollars. I mean, that's
yes,
why we do it, right?
Yes. And,
yeah. Well, we are the regional planners, but we do,
right,
this particular process in order to meet those federal standards and,
right,
justify having funding come to help us with transportation needs.
Yes, and I would mention that it really goes even beyond federal transportation dollars that we could get in trouble with in terms of if we don't meet these requirements. Councillor Dirksen's familiar with our discussions around the congestion mitigation air quality funding. And the reasons behind why we get those funds in this region and discussions we've had statewide. And there are consequences even within our industrial sector if we don't meet these standards. Right now, because we meet these standards and because we have aggressive transportation control measures, that allows our industry's permitting process to go more smoothly and more easily, and they don't have to put as onerous of pollution control equipment on their facilities because we are successful in the transportation sector. So that's just an example of other places where we could get into trouble if we're not in compliance with these regulations.
Thank you. And thank you for doing this every year, or every 3 years now.
Yes. But for
a very long time.
Thank you.
I have a question that I think is at least tangentially a follow-on to Councillor Stacey's question. This process that we've been after for a number of years is really to meet federal air quality standards. And you make the point that it allows us to do other and have other opportunities too, but the driving force has been federal air quality standards. There is a lot of evidence early on, it's early evidence, that this administration will not prioritize air quality as highly as other previous administrations have. Conversely, and somewhat ironically, probably importantly, the state has begun to look to expanding what they're going to demand in terms of air quality, some of which won't have anything to do with transportation, because unless we start blowing chromium out the tailpipe, which I don't think we're going to do. But I guess the question is, are we going to move to a point where, I think similar to what Councillor Stacey said, where we're going to look at a set of standards and say, look, we need a set of standards that meets the federal requirements or whatever those are, that also meets the state requirements, but maybe exceeds them in order to actually worry about air quality. And I don't know that we're there yet with this. I don't know that the 2018 to 2021 cycle is going to be a problem for us to meet those requirements, but it might be a breathing space for us to begin to look at what the long game is for air quality and what do we need to do to tweak our own requirements.
Yes, and I think there are conversations going on in different venues well beyond our transportation one where those kinds of issues are being discussed. And I think probably in a more comprehensive way. Again, we only have to demonstrate compliance with the federally regulated pollutants where we haven't met those standards in the past. There are many other air quality or emission issues out there that are in addition to or beyond what the federal regulations address. That, you know, local agencies, yourself, other local agencies may have concerns about and want to regulate on a local or state level.
Okay. Other questions? If not, let's go back to item 4.1, resolution 174816. Yep. And is there any discussion around that? If not, could we have a roll call?
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Council President Hughes?
Aye. Can I have a motion on resolution 17-4817?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Okay. Any discussion on that resolution? Could we have a roll call, please?
Councillor Harrington?
Yes.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Collette?
Yes.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Council President Hughes?
Aye. Motion carries on that one also. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you.
So area number 5 are ordinances. We have one ordinance number 17-1407. Ms. Papstorf, could we have that read by title only?
Ordinance number 17-1407, for the purpose of amending the Title 14 map of the Urban Growth Management Functional Plan to conform with changes enacted by the Oregon Legislature in House Bill 2047.
Mr. O'Brien.
Good afternoon, Council President Hughes, councilors, Tim O'Brien, Metro Planning Department staff. I have a very brief staff report for you today. Before you today is an ordinance to correct some technical errors that were made to the urban and rural reserves in Washington County through legislative action. After the legislature enacted House Bill 4078, it was discovered that there were a few errors in the legal descriptions of some of the properties and roadways being described as urban or rural reserves. The errors were corrected through House Bill 2047. This ordinance before you today will make the required changes to the Title 14 map, the official map of the urban growth boundary and the urban and rural reserves in the Urban Growth Management Functional Plan. As can be seen in the staff report, 4 of the 7 changes concern road right-of-way, and 3 of the changes concern a parcel or a portion thereof. The overall acreage is about 34 acres, and it is basically split evenly between road right-of-way and parcels. There are no significant changes to the reserve areas themselves, and the technical fixes will certainly eliminate future problems if and when those urban reserve areas are added to the urban growth boundary. That was pretty much all I really had planned on saying today, and certainly would, I'm glad to answer any questions you may have about the areas.
Questions for Mr. O'Brien, huh?
Thank you. I'm just looking for a little reassurance when we've gone through steps in this process before around rural and urban reserves. We tried to ensure as we initially laid them out and were adopting maps that where there was an area that was an urban reserve butting up against another area that was not an urban reserve and outside of the UGB, that the line for any road improvements would be such that it comprehended pedestrian and bikeway access beyond the actual pavement line. Sufficient right-of-way, that's right. So there may be that the current right-of-way on some of these unimproved roads doesn't have that width. So I'm just raising this again consistently to ensure that as we go through processes with any technical corrections, we don't lose the spirit of making sure that in the future, as an urban reserve area is planned and built out, that we don't, what we didn't want to end up with, what we were trying to avoid is a situation where improvements could be made on one side of the road, but if you needed to walk to the bus stop on the other side of the road to catch the bus in the other direction or ride your bike back via the other direction, that there were unsafe conditions. So does this still move forward with that commitment?
Councilor Harrington, yes, I believe it does, because it does bring in the entire right-of-way into the urban reserve, for instance. But it also allows in the future, as the concept planning occurs of that area and they develop the plans for it, that the road right-of-way may actually move into the urban area to address that full street, complete street capacity that we want in those situations.
Okay. So I know I'll keep asking.
It's hard to make sure that those technical details are followed through when you're basically drawing a map with a felt pen on a chalkboard on a Sunday afternoon in Hillsboro. So
it's better than the old chart pack tape. Yeah.
Slightly.
Great. Thank you for your continued patience.
So other questions? Hearing no other questions, I'm going to open a public hearing on ordinance number 17-1407. If there's anyone who wishes to testify in support, don't flock forward, tripping on each other. And if there's anyone in opposition, same large group. Seeing no one, not only no one coming forward, just no one, I'm going to close the public hearing and see if there are... Oh, no, wait a second. Second reading, council consideration, and vote are scheduled for Thursday, August 10th. Next item on the agenda, COO report.
So first of all, I just wanted to remind everybody that today is the first meeting of Metro's brand new Committee on Racial Equity. I know many of you are planning to be there, and I appreciate that very much. I think you all also know that when we were appointing the Committee on Racial Equity, which I will now call CORE, we had 72 applications, so there's a lot of interest in this committee. And just as a reminder, this was a committee that was created to help us implement the strategic plan to advance racial equity, diversity, and inclusion that you adopted last year. And this is an advisory group that's going to provide advice to us about how to implement the plan, some communication with community-based organizations and the public generally about how we're doing, accountability to the community on how we're doing, and then support for how we're going to evaluate our progress towards implementing the plan. So I appreciate you being there. They're, in addition to sort of getting grounded in their charge, they're also going to spend some time tonight working on their bylaws and how they're going to work together and how they're going to work with staff. So thank you very much. Second, I hope you also saw the email from Paul Sliman today that told us all that Matt Tracy, who is a senior solid waste planner, got appointed to the Gladstone City Council, making him the second Metro staff person to be appointed in the last year after Shane Abma became a City of Milwaukee City Councilor. And I'm pretty excited and also a little scared that Councilor Collette now has several Metro employees who are City Councilors in her district. But I do think that Matt will be a terrific asset to Gladstone, both because of his smarts and his ability to work together, but also some of his experience working with in union leadership will help him, I think, a great deal. So congratulations, Matt, and please say something to him the next time you see him. And then last but not least, I've gotten a couple questions from council members about Right to Dream 2, and I thought I'd just answer them all for all of you, one as opposed to... Yeah. Property and Environmental Services staff have had a lot of coordination with Right to Dream 2, which is the nonprofit that's operating a safe space now close by on the east side of the river for some of the folks who are not in standard housing. They were having challenges with sorting waste, and they called us up, and we have given them signage, connected them with free waste educational services, and provided some guidance and technical assistance on how they can manage all kinds of waste on the site. I'm told that things are working a lot better than they were when they first moved to this new site. We also have worked with them to get 34 gallons of Metro paint to them, and solid waste ops staff have helped them get access to some wood or lumber that otherwise would be disposed of. So I thought you'd want to know, first of all, it's a really highly collaborative relationship, and I think it's going to be a model of how we can work together on projects like this. If you have questions, please let Paul Sliman or Stephanie Rawson of the Rid Patrol know, and they would be happy to give you more details.
Thank you. Okay. Councilor Communications. Whoop, nobody's lighting up my... Shirley, are you... You just can't... You can't... Go ahead.
Anyway, I have... Yes, I have it. Something to report. Last time I attended the East Portland Action Plan monthly meeting, and I don't attend regularly, but I last night there was a celebration regarding the funding for Powell Boulevard, the $110 million that was put in the state transportation package for Powell Boulevard. And the group that is the East Portland Action Plan, there are regularly, I think, 30 to 40 people at this meeting each month. And it's just really fun to sit back and see all the different, the diversity from different, different backgrounds, different interests, different organizations. It's just a very diverse group in how they work together. They're very proud because they take a lot of credit, which they should, that they made this the highest priority for this group to find funding for the future for Powell Boulevard. And they did this in a much shorter amount of time than they had ever expected, which was 5 years. So 5 years ago, they identified that Powell Boulevard was their most important project to find to get funding for improvements, for transportation improvements. They invited State Representative Janelle Bynum there. She, what I didn't know until last night, is that she was the legislator that put that Powell into that larger package. And so she was there, and they thanked her profusely for her help with that. And then in addition to that, they are now moving forward, creating a coalition or a group that is a subgroup of their larger group that is going to focus on transportation funding. They're going to be now working with TriMet on the work that TriMet plans to do regarding trying to get regional support for additional transportation funding. And so they're ready to go. They're really well organized, and a lot of credit needs to go to Laura Wintergreen, who is their advocate. She's in a paid staff position, and without her help, I don't think this group would have been not as successful as they have been. So they're just really proud for their work. This is quite an accomplishment for them.
Okay, other comments? Seeing no further discussion, I'm going to adjourn the council meeting. Next regular council meeting is scheduled for Thursday, August 10th at 2 p.m. at the Metro Regional Center Council Chambers. And we are now going to convene in the council annex for an executive session held pursuant to ORS 192.6602E to conduct deliberations with persons designated by the governing body to negotiate real property transactions. We're adjourned.